of Dr. K. I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead here again to have a conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. And folks, at this moment here on this Tuesday, nothing matters more than the fact that violence is surging once again in Baltimore City. Now, we have had this conversation before. How many times have we talked about violence surging in this city? It's not a new conversation. What is new is the fact that the Baltimore Police Department, the FOP Lodge 3, which is kind of the major representative for BPD, they're now tweeting out and they're saying that we are hashtag a city in crisis. Folks, I could have told them that. Right? They could have gotten me to handle their Twitter feed and I would have let them know very clearly that this is a city that's in crisis. Why are they surprised? It's a city in 1 year that's dealt with our mayor in Healthy Holly. There's a city in 1 year that's dealt with the ransomware attack. There's a city in 1 year that's dealt with a community going without water at this point for almost 9 days. When you talk about a city in crises, folks, like, I don't think there's another definition to the word crises than what's happening here in Baltimore City. This weekend alone, 14 people have been shot in Baltimore City, 7 of them murdered. I'm not quite sure what other definition there is for the word crises, but it's what we're dealing with right now. If we just compare it to last year this time, we've seen a 20% spike in shootings, and we have nearly 20 more murders than last year. So I'm thinking that the Baltimore Police Union is spot on. Now, I'm thinking they're coming in late to being spot on, but they're definitely spot on. We are hashtag city in crisis, but we got to get some answers. Yesterday, at the end of the show, I talked about this. I talked about this violence, and some of you, my loyal listeners, called in and threw out this radical idea where you said maybe it's time to bring back stop and frisk. Yes, folks, you have heard that correctly. Some of our wonderful listeners are saying maybe the answer to Baltimore City is to bring back stop and frisk. Stop and frisk, according to research, has been known to cause PTSD in young black residents of a city. Knowing that the cops can stop you for nothing more than the color of your skin, it actually traumatizes young brothers of color. It does. Stop and frisk in New York, and I was in New York when stop and frisk was a big thing, when they were saying this is how we're going to bring down crime in this city, when we were doing things like quality of life crimes. Now, what that meant is if you played your radio too loud, people could call the cops on you, and cops could show up because you're breaking the quality of life. If your dog is barking late at night, quality of life crime. If you're jumping over turnstile, urinating the street, all these are quality of life crimes, but it was a way of getting your information into the database. Go back and watch some old Law & Order SVU episodes. You'll see what I'm talking about. And in New York, with stop and frisk, it became associated with racial profiling, which makes sense. Well, the recent research has shown that when they reduced stop and frisk in New York, crime also went down. Fascinating. I want to get into that discussion today because I'm not sure if the two solutions that were placed on the table yesterday are solutions we want to stand on. Solution number one, someone said, bring back stop and frisk. And solution number two, believe it or not, someone said, why don't we become a military city? Why don't we just bring in the armed militia and that might help to bring things under control? We got a lot to talk about. In the second hour at 4 p.m., we want to get an update on Poe Homes. We just saw a piece put out by the Baltimore Brew, and we got some questions about Poe Homes. We want to see what's happening with that community. What's going on with the new toilets and the new faucets? Are things back up and running in Poe Homes? We'll talk about that at 4. But first, let's talk about Baltimore City, a city in crisis. I'm getting that hashtag from the Baltimore Police Union. We reached out to someone who comes on our show very often, Sergeant Clyde Boatwright. We asked him to come out and join us. He's the president of the School Police Union and the first vice president of the Maryland Fraternal Order of Police. Sergeant Boatwright, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Dr. K. Thank you for having me. Good afternoon to your listeners.
Yes. So now I just want to jump right into it, Sergeant Boatride. Now we took a look at the video that you put on your Facebook. I described it yesterday, of just a police officer who was trying to detain a young woman on the ground, and a man was running toward her from the back. Two other police officers were trying to keep him away, but the man did run up on the police officer in the back, and they were able to get him to the ground. But the comments on this clip were things like, this is what happens with the consent decree. Is this the kind of Baltimore City we want? People don't respect the police. I'm coupling that with what happened this weekend with the number of people that were shot and killed, and the BPU, the Baltimore Police Union, putting out a tweet saying that we're a city in crises. I want to hear from you, Sergeant Boatwright. Just what is your sense of what is happening on the ground when it comes to the relationship between police officers and the community from your perspective?
So in the summer of 2015, I noticed that when I was following Baltimore Police FOP Twitter, and this was in the wake of the uprising, in wake of the death of Freddie Gray, and we had a serious spike in violence, and very serious, you know, homicides were on the rise, and the Baltimore police started tweeting about us being a city in crisis. So this goes back to 2015. So I have started to track that whenever we have major incidents where there's a high level of violence in our city. And I've continued to use it, and so has, you know, Baltimore Police FOP has continued to use it. And I know other people that are using it as well, because we are a city in crisis, and we need to address the issues that are going on in our city, especially the crime and violence. If we can stop the violent crime and the homicides, I mean, we're talking about shootings being up, but if you look on Winter Avenue the other night, we just had a man, I think it was last night or night before last, we had a man beat to death with a brick in relation to after a car accident. He got in a car accident with another motorist, and they dragged him from the car and beat him with a brick. So we have all types of violent acts that are going on, and these are the things that we need to address. This is the highest priority of all of, you know, us that are in law enforcement, to stop the violent crime.
So now with that in mind, do you think that part of what we're seeing, and we kind of explored this on the show a bit yesterday, and you went back to 2015. In 2015, when we had the uprising, and we saw a lot of discussion around the consent decree, which was not new, but we saw a big push for the consent decree. We also saw, and people could attest to this, and we saw kind of a lot of stories about the response time in policing had gone down, where people were calling the police that seemed to be a little bit slow on the uptick to get out to the communities. Do you see that these two things, the consent decree, along with, you know, more eyes on the police, with the relationship with the community, has led us to a place where there's more violence now because policing is not the same?
Well, you know, as a law enforcement professional, and I've studied consent decrees, I knew, and our colleagues knew that the consent decree was not going to be the answer to our problems in our city. But it was sold and billed to our community as though this was the, you know, the panacea. This is going to fix it all.
Right.
Let's do a consent decree. And all it was just buying time, to be honest with you,
right,
to say, oh, this consent decree is coming. We have to wait for the judge to put these stipulations in place. And now we have the judge, you know, saying, hey, it's going to cost you a lot of money to do this. And, oh, yeah, we have to do it. We have to do it. And it kept, you know, we were going election after election after election, just to get people to buy time and pandering for votes. This consent decree, although they work as far as upgrading technology, will be a better, you know, law enforcement community based on that, because, you know, the resources that have come are antiquated, that are being used in policing in the city. If you look at other jurisdictions, they have the best of everything because they invest in their police departments. In Baltimore, we haven't done that for all of the police departments across the board. We have not invested in the best tools, equipment, pay, benefits, pension. And there's a whole other, you know, other discussion that we had about how this is going to benefit us. But our issue from the ground is violent crime. How do we address violent crime? And as a Baltimore, a child of Baltimore who has had multiple family members murdered in my city, I love this city, and we all are invested in this, but how do we stop that? That's what we need to address, which is the main issue, is the violent crime.
So I want to ask you, Sergeant Boatwright, is we tend to see kind of a surge when it comes to violence during the summertime here in Baltimore City for a variety of reasons, one of which is that people, you know, don't have places to go. People are home during the daytime. People are out later because it's warmer. I understand all that. But what do you think are some of the things that we can do at this point? If you were to just talk to residents, things that we can do to hopefully stop the movement that we're making toward reaching another 300 homicides this year. We're at 150 now. And it may have been one or two today, but 150 as of yesterday afternoon. What do you think we can do to turn this tide before we hit too far into the summer?
So, you know, it's been my experience. I came in right at the height of the broken windows theory, stop and frisk, and all of these different terms that we in policing, we go through these periods where there's the new fad on what, you know, what we do globally across the board on what, you know, the different types of strategies we use in policing. And the one thing I do know that works, and it is old-fashioned community policing, but that includes, it does not eliminate the plainclothes policing. It makes good cops make good arrests and also let the investigative tools work. Because, you know, we could talk about stop snitching and we could talk about all of that other stuff, but when a person who has a criminal record is backing up some serious time, and they get caught for a case, they will tell and tell and tell. Then we can start getting to the bottom of who was committing some of these murders. Right. When you have something to hold over to somebody else. At this point, it's a sense of lawlessness because people don't feel as though they're going to be held accountable. They can do whatever they want. Nobody's going to arrest them. Nobody's going to prosecute them. That's the overall, you know, the mindset of people in Baltimore at this point. People that are committing crimes, that's their mindset. Nobody's going to stop me. Nobody's going to arrest me. And nobody's going to prosecute.
And that's a problem. I think on the opposite end of the spectrum, Sergeant Boatwright, you have what came across in the news with Sergeant Newberg. And for people who are not familiar with it, it's the police officer who arrested, had the man arrested for just asking a question. But he also ended up in 2018 being the second highest paid city employee, $243,000 plus, in half of that in overtime. So there's some people look at the police department and say, okay, we don't invest, but what about people like Sergeant Newberg?
Well, let me speak on this overtime. And this, you know, hopefully we can put this to bed. You work in a 10-hour shift, and at, you know, 7 hours into your 10-hour shift, you're told that you have to work another 10-hour shift because your relief is not coming. And then on that second end of that, the 20-hour shift now, you get a murder. You get a shooting, you get an arrest. And so that now turns into 24 hours or 26 hours because you're now at the hospital collecting clothes of the victim. You're now at evidence control submitting evidence. You're now at central booking making an arrest or processing an arrest. So now you've been there for 26 hours, almost a whole day. And then you have to turn around and do it again the next day. So this, and then you've already signed up to work the AFRAM, the Preakness, the Orioles, the Ravens, Civic Center, Baltimore Arena, or one of these races, because every week Baltimore has a different race.
Right.
It's race for this, race for that. They all need police. They have parades. They all need police. So to say that police officers are some way, or inferring that police officers are some way stealing because they're actually working the overtime that they sign up for is wrong.
Well, now, just to be clear, we're definitely not inferring that they're stealing it. I'm asking you a question because the question is put out there. When you said that we don't invest enough in police officer, I know that people think, well, what about all the overtime? And the way you just laid it out and spelled out what happens with the overtime, then the question that begs itself is, what about the quality of life? If a police officer has worked a 10-hour shift and then they've been told they get another 10-hour shift and they have a murder and you've gone through all that and they do it again tomorrow, how are we talking about people who are effective with weapons, with this type of power, and they're working back-to-back shifts that really don't leave a lot of time to sleep from what I'm getting from you?
Well, that goes into the genesis of the main issue. We are short. Policing is short. We're picking from the same barrel. The sheriff's office, school police, Baltimore police, MTA police, we're all trying to hire the same candidate.
Right.
Because we're not telling our kids that it's okay to be a police officer. If you want to see change in your community, be the change that you want to see.
Right.
Come sign up. These jobs are good jobs. They're good paying jobs. Tell out, but I try to encourage everyone to come out. If you want to see change, that's what I did. I wanted to see, I had a negative encounter with the police, and that's why I became a police officer. Because I wanted to be the change that I wanted to see. I wanted to be able to help kids. I wanted to be able to help people that come from my neighborhood in West Baltimore. So these jobs are open. We're short. We're hiring. I know Baltimore School Police, my job, we're hiring. We want police officers. Come work for us.
Well, then my last question for you, and I definitely do appreciate your time. One of our callers said yesterday that Baltimore is starting to look like the wild, wild west. Now, I've said the same thing, but I want to say from where you're sitting, as someone who is working within the schools, who became a police officer because of your own negative encounter with police, and you want to work to help young people, from where you sit right now, is Baltimore City like the wild, wild west in the ways that people kind of are comparing it to that right now?
So I just recently spent some time in Chicago, and, 2 weeks ago. And while I was in Chicago, there were some murders and there were shootings. But in the area of Chicago, I guess it would be the equivalent of Canton in Baltimore.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was a whole separate world away from the things that go on in the communities. It's the same in Baltimore. We have pockets of areas that need some special attention, some additional love, that if we can show investment, because you can keep throwing money at different things, but if, you know, you keep throwing money and you're not investing and you're not giving people an outlet, then we're going to continue to have these high numbers of crimes. I look at it like this. To answer your question, simply, yes, we are like the Wild Wild West. So until, you know, we have an aggressive approach to treating these issues and then we can back down, it's almost like a person that gets diagnosed with a medical condition.
Right.
Sometimes the doctors start with the most serious of treatment,
right,
and then say,
okay,
we need to back off the medicine a little bit more.
Wild Wild West. Well, Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, President of the School Police Union and first Vice President at the Maternal Fraternal Order of Police, thank you so much for your time. We will definitely look to follow up with you throughout the summer because we like everybody else, are going to track these numbers very, very closely because it is concerning to, one, be a city in crisis. We understand that. But to hear that from the Baltimore Police Union, to hear from where you sit, it is like the Wild Wild West. You can imagine civilians are greatly concerned at this point.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So, folks, that's what we're talking about. Baltimore City. Hashtag City in Crisis. This is coming from the Baltimore Police Union. We just talked to Sergeant Boatwright. It's like the wild, wild west. This weekend alone, 14 people have been shot in Baltimore City. 7 of them murdered. One person, the whole thing ended with a car accident. He got out. People beating to death with bricks. I don't know what is happening in this city right now. Bring back Stop and Frisk. Do we call in the militia? I don't know. I want to hear from you. 410-319-8888. I have Leo on the phone. I want to talk to him before I go to break. Leo Burris, how are you?
Dr. K-Wise Whitehead, how you doing?
I'm doing fine,
well,
sir.
Well, you stay on the battlefield and don't leave. Because I hope that Sergeant Clyde Boatwright will give me a call if he's still listening. He has my phone number. I need to talk with him about several issues. Be that as it may, $243,000... is still too much money for any one police officer, overtime, undertime, under the bed, on the moon, on the whatever. That's just too much money for a Newberg-type individual who turns out to be a prejudiced cop. That's just bad, bad business. Now, my question is, does the sheriff's office, because we never hear from Sheriff John Anderson, the highest elected law enforcement official
in the
city.
No, we don't. You are absolutely right. No,
he
we never, don't.
He doesn't want to talk. The Democratic Party that elects him, the insiders, they don't want him to talk. And I want him to talk because he's evading his responsibilities in shaping crime-fighting strategies. I personally want to sit down with the sheriff, the police commissioner, Harrison, and others. My team, we have some crime-fighting strategies that we want to share by way of recommendation on what we need to do. I don't think they're soliciting from people in the grassroots enough by way of constructive, not just criticism, but constructive strategies and tactics. They seem to know the answers, and they don't know them in their entirety. They need to get it from those of us who live here and have lived in this city all of our lives.
Well, let me ask you this, Leo, because, you know, we do look to you as an elder in this community. Can you give us, you know, a bird's eye view of this proposed plan? Because I know I'm interested. I'm sure the listeners are as well. You got some solutions. Can you tell us a few of them? Because I'm sure Clyde Boatwright is still listening.
Let me give you two of them.
Okay.
One of which, we have to provide a mechanism for enforcing the loitering laws. There's laws against loitering.
Right.
But allegedly, people are saying, well, under the consent decree, they cannot be enforced. I don't believe that. We don't believe that. Why don't we live stream? Why don't we have, we've got nine police districts here. Each police district will have a camera watch van. These officers' job primarily is to photograph hot spots, open air drug markets, et cetera, that are known collections coming together for criminal activity, whether they be liquor stores or whether they be north in Pennsylvania or Broadway and North, wherever they might be. If you photograph an area and half hour later you come back and the same person is standing in the same place,
right,
it seems to me that then and only then can you approach that person and ask them why they're there. Are they waiting for the bus? Or if they say it's none of your business, on the third round shot, you give them a citation. You don't lock them up, but you give them a citation. I'm saying there has to be a way. One, we use drones. You can use drone technology as well.
Okay, so I'm just kidding. We use drones. We have videotape. You know what, Leo? I'm actually going to put you on hold over the break because I want to come back to this, folks. I want you to weigh in. Are we talking, what Leo is saying sounds so close to that notion of stop and frisk. You see them the first time, you come around the corner, they're still out, you want to know what they're up to, you give them a, I don't know. We got to talk about it. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. When we come back, Leo will give us a second solution. I also have Marie on the phone. We want to hear from you as well.
It's like we say this every weekend, every Monday at 6 o'clock. Another weekend sees a disturbing level of violence here in Baltimore. We said the same thing last weekend. And here we are on Saturday, more than a dozen people have been shot. Half of that, many of them were murdered. And one of the latest is a man who was chased down and killed after a car accident. WMAR 2 News, Brian Kubler with another weekend in Baltimore.
Since Saturday, 13 people have been shot in Baltimore. Six were murdered. Baltimore police say one of them was a man who ran off the road on Whittier Avenue in West Baltimore last night. Neighbors here heard the collision.
It's like an accident, boom, you know, and somebody hit something. So that's when the car went down in there.
You can still see the tire marks down the hill. The crime tape is still up. Police say it started a few blocks back when there was a collision between two cars. The victim was able to drive his away, but he was followed by the other car. After the victim wrecked out down this hill, one or more of the suspects from the other car jumped out and murdered the man. Police say they used bricks. They beat him to death.
This is being investigated as a homicide. We believe that at least one person, if not more, assaulted the victim. We believe that bricks and other objects may have been involved with the assault. So we're hoping someone comes forward.
So, folks, that was courtesy of Channel 2. Listen to what he said, that there was a car accident. I don't know what was happening between the drivers of the car. The person who got hit got out. And one or more people from the other car beat him to death with bricks, folks. When we talk about a city in crisis, this is what it looks like. It's not just about the 14 people who were shot this weekend, seven of them murdered. It's not just Poe Homes' water crisis and the fact that they've been without a regular steady stream of water since last Monday. It's not just that we're getting settled with the new mayor. It's not just that we're getting settled with the new police commissioner. It's not just that we're dealing with the fact that we got the ransomware payoff. It's not just any of those individual factors. Here in Baltimore City, they are stacked one on top of the other. Today, we're drilling down deep into this violence thing because the Baltimore Police Union tweeted out that we are a city in crisis. Let me read you the tweet, and I'm going to go back to your calls. This is a quote now. The BPD is 500 officers short, no choice but to fill shifts using overtime. At Mayor B.C. Young and at Council President BMS Brandon Scott, they should not confuse fiscal responsibility with the fact that people are dying and Baltimore police has no crime plan to stop it. Hashtag city in crisis. You know what stands out to me there? Everything in this whole tweet is very disturbing, but the most disturbing part of it is this one sentence here. Baltimore police has no crime plan to stop it. That's the surge in violence. They have no plan in place, folks. So when they say city in crisis, it's happening on every front. You're in crisis. I'm in crisis. The cops in crisis. Those out here committing crimes, they're in crisis. We're all in crisis now, and no one seems to have a plan because if the cops don't have a plan, I don't have a plan, but maybe Leo Burris does. I have Leo Burris on hold. He says they got a plan for how to get rid of the violence. The number one thing he just said, put some mechanisms in place for enforcing the loitering laws. Right, Leo?
That is correct. Just let me very quickly make an announcement. Marvin Doc Cheatham and I are hosting a community rally at City Hall tomorrow at 4:30 regarding the Poe Homes and our support for the residents of Poe Homes. We've got people from Poe Homes and community organizations, individuals who want to speak. We're giving them 3 minutes in which to make a statement thereabout. So that's at 4:30 in front of City Hall on Wednesday the 26th, tomorrow. Come one, come all.
Okay, now before I want to ask you, Leo, because you told me you had at least two solutions. Can I get the number two solution?
My proposal is called Knock on Every Door.
Okay.
It's a kind of a dragnet operation. It might require 75 to 100 police officers, sort of a flying squad situation, in which these police officers are paired with community neighborhood association volunteers. You bracket an area, 4-square box, 5-square block area. You come in for a period of 24 to 48 hours, not more than 72 hours. And you set up the safety and sobriety checkpoints at which you have a legitimate right to stop cars and to check on sobriety and the safety of those. And I'm not just talking about seat belts.
Right.
You may bump into some fugitives as well, but it brings you legally in contact with the public. This dragnet would also involve city agencies, in which city agency employees, would some of whom will be delegated to work around the clock at a command station within that area that is being dragnetted to provide city services, whatever those city services should be across the board.
Okay.
And again, this will cause inconvenience.
It will
slow the pace of traffic.
Absolutely.
We understand all that. But what you got to do is you've got to legally blockade an area that is most impacted by violence.
Leo.
We know those zip codes.
I mean, Leo, I hear what you're saying, and I can understand people's reticence to sign on to this, a major dragnet operation blockading certain communities.
That doesn't mean you
people.
Can't
I mean,
move around.
I know you can't, but I mean, you know, we seemed like we were there after the. After Detective Souter died,
one thing we have to have, Dr. K, and people say they don't need, you got to have a mandatory law. I guess it comes from the state of Maryland. All these Democrats know each other. They run the state. There has to be a requirement if you're 13 years of age or older, you must have an ID. We need to be able to determine.
Okay.
If you're 13 years of age or older, you don't have a driver's license, you've got to. A state ID with your picture on it, and if you can't afford it at the time, we will give it to you. We have a command center. They can give it to you on the street because they have the technology. They'll bill you within 90 days thereafter. But everybody's got to have an ID so we can start to get a handle on when you request, say, who are you? At least we know you're either a resident of the city or state or you're an outsider. But
now
we got
to
have
you there,
ID provisions.
I appreciate you. I got to stop you there so I can get some other calls. Okay, folks, so Leo has just kind of started us down the path that we began with yesterday. Yesterday, we started talking about this virus. I'm putting all these solutions down here because some of these solutions are very different from solutions I would offer, okay? But this is what you're saying. So one of you said yesterday, hey, let's bring back stop and frisk. When I thought that was bad, it was upped when the next caller called and said, no, not stop and frisk. Let's just bring in the armed militia and lock down Baltimore City. Yes, one of your fellow friends said we need to just blanket the whole city. Well, Leo has said we need a mechanism for enforcing loitering laws. He actually said putting cops out here, recording folks standing on the corner, standing in front of a store, circling the block, coming back, and you need to get fined. He also said doing a major dragnet operation where you blockade certain communities off. And then third, that Leo said that maybe what we need to do now is if you are 13 years of age or older, you need to have an ID. The last time I heard about everybody having an ID is when I was visiting South Africa. I'm not saying we're talking about that type of apartheid situation, but you need an ID. We can make one for you on the spot. You got solutions, folks? Well, the Baltimore police has also thrown out a solution. They've deployed cops to 120 of the most violent micro zones, which is three times per patrol shift under this new strategy. So everybody's got these strategies that they're trying to do. What do you think should happen? Baltimore is a city in crisis. It's like the wild, wild west. And even the Baltimore Police Union is tweeting out that the Baltimore cops don't have a plan in place. 410-319-8888. I have Marie on the phone. Marie, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm just sorry to hear about the thing that happened this past weekend.
Oh, yes.
I have no plan because I'm not in the police department. But I argue with somebody who lives out in the Midwest, and I'm telling them all the time that this city is worse than Chicago.
Oof.
And they said they disagree, I mean not in a violent way or anything, that they feel that Chicago is worse than Baltimore. So what's your opinion on this, dear?
So is, now I will say, in terms of pure numbers, I was surprised at the latest statistics that came out talking about the most dangerous city, that Baltimore City is now higher on the list in terms of being more dangerous than Chicago. When you talk about the most dangerous cities on the planet,
mm-hmm.
Chicago's not on that list, but Baltimore City and St. Louis are on that list. So if you just look at pure numbers, and when they put down all the statistics right now, Baltimore City, with just pure numbers, is coming up higher as being more dangerous and more violent than Chicago.
I thank you very much for taking my call. You have a good day.
You too, Marie. Let's talk to Thomas from Baltimore. Thomas, how are you?
Hey, darling.
How you feeling?
Well, not too good after listening to Leo.
Oof.
I used to have respect for that man. I got no respect for him now.
Because you disagree with him?
I got no respect for him now because this is the same man that when they locked down the area that Detective Souter was killed in, he was all up in arms. Oh, you can't do that to people. You can't lock an area down like that. Now he's coming back saying, let's dragnet these areas and lock them down.
That's huge.
My thing is this, okay? Some of these so-called activists, Dr. K, it depends on who's paying them today. Who they get their money from today? One minute they're for the community, next minute they're for the police, you know? You don't know where these people are at. Yeah, they are all over the place. And Dr. K, in case of Leo still listening, he doesn't understand that the United States Supreme Court has ruled. You can't just walk up to a person, stop them, and ask them why they're standing on the corner. That is against the law. That's why we are having a dissent decree now.
All right.
Come on, people.
Oh, no. It is something, Thomas. I appreciate you. Now, folks, I just want to make a note that we just pulled up. According to Baltimore City Code, Article 19, Subtitle 25, Section 25.1, loitering is defined as standing around or remaining in a car that is parked in a public place or place open to the public, engaging in any conduct prohibited under the law, collecting, gathering, congregating for any amount of time. So loitering is actually spelled out. So all Leo is saying, and I'm not defending Leo, he can definitely defend himself. Leo is saying, hey, when you see the brothers out there, because I'm sure Leo is not saying going over to Mount Washington and talking to people standing out in front of Whole Foods who are standing or sitting in their car. He doesn't mean that. We're talking about the zip codes, because Leo said we all know the zip codes. Talking to the brothers, Baltimore City is more than 65% black. So the brothers out there, hey, we're going to go ahead and videotape you out on the corner, and then we're going to drive away. And if we see you again, we're going to stop. That's what we're talking about, Dragnet. Has it gotten that bad, folks? I mean, Leo put it out here. We can discuss it. 410-319-8888. I have a new caller here, Jaleel, new caller from Baltimore. Jaleel, how are you? And welcome to the family.
Jaleel, hey, I have to agree with the gentleman who just called about Leo. He's right. He's 100% right. I disagree with the brother's position. We have legal laws. We had a 20-30 year battle of the civil rights during the 60s, the 50s, and the 60s to achieve the things we got to make this society. It is us who blew life into the Constitution that gave it life, from voting rights on forward. So let's not repeat the problem. But one of the problems are that we are the problem. City Council is part of the problem. Baltimore City Police is part of the problem. Wherever there's a crisis, there's new opportunity. The police department, I support them, but they're part of doing some of the greatest things that they can. They're doing. We appreciate them. The thing is, the City Council, I think, and the politicians and the police departments are going to have to reconsider their tactical plan in terms of 2019 police tactics. I work in a private sector of security and law enforcement. There are new ways. Resources have to be rethought about, time, energy, and planning. You can't just throw the water with the baby out with the water. You just can't do it. And we have a constitution. We have to abide by that. We have to abide by that. But when you start bringing up these ideas, it's counterproductive because you have to put it in its full context.
Right.
For example, we're talking about Chicago. When you talk about crime and you read the FBI's national statistics reports, you have to keep it in context in terms of population and what type of crimes we're talking about. I live in New York. I'm from the New York area. We had 6,000 killings a year in New York.
And I remember those 80, days.
This is nothing. I mean, it's serious. It's horrible. You know, it's regrettable, but we've seen what these problems and how to solve them. Some ideas work, some ideas do not.
Right.
Another thing about Chicago is this part of the center of the country. Just like FedEx distributes its mail, if you balance the country on its finger, Memphis is the center of the country. Drugs that come in from Mexico, Central America, and other parts of the world, they're essentially coming straight into Chicago.
Mm.
And they're being distributed. But one of the biggest crimes is human trafficking.
Yes, it is. Yes,
so we have to keep context of what's going on, how we got to this point, and what we're willing to do about it. One of the solving of the problems is that I think the city, Baltimore City, needs to restructure how they're deploying, using their finances in terms of crime prevention and the police tactics.
I'm so glad you joined the family. Folks, this is a heated topic. I'm just saying, Leo has really put something on the table. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the law, I just want to be clear that when a police officer can't figure out what a citizen is doing wrong, I mean, they're convinced you're doing something wrong, and they don't know exactly what, they arrest you for loitering or prowling. Loitering is providing a service of getting people into the system and off the street where you don't know exactly what they're doing, but you think they're doing something. It's a second-degree misdemeanor punishable by up to 60 days in jail, 6 months probation, or a $500 fine. So when Leo says that we need to perhaps start saying or start fining people for loitering, it's when we don't see that they're doing something wrong, but we feel it. We also understand that black cops, white cops, Asian cops, Hispanic cops feel that black folks are doing more things wrong. Elliot from West Baltimore, what do you think, Elliot?
Thank you, Dr. K, for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Look, I'm going to keep it brief. You know, I've been living in the city for many, many years, okay, born and bred a whole bit. And, you know, I used to teach school. And yeah, I used to listen to my kids talk about different things. They talked about violence. I mean, we would have really, really deep, open discussions. And I used to always ask them, what is it? I mean, don't you all have anything to do over the weekends? I mean, do you need to go to more rec centers or what? And honestly, Dr. K, I used to hear some of the responses like, oh, no, Mr. W, no, you don't understand. Yo, this is cool, man. This is fun. So I said, you mean it's more like a sport? And I'm not saying that, please don't misunderstand, but it's just that it used to freak me out because it was like, wait a minute, this is actually fun. I mean, this is like playing basketball, going swimming or something. You know, just robbing people, hurting people randomly. And I didn't want it to believe that, but this was the actual real deal. I'm not saying everybody, but in a lot of cases. And my friends, a lot of my friends have moved to Baltimore County, which is cool. And they used to always ask me, oh, how come you don't come, like, you need to get out of that city and come to the county? I'm like, well, it's not much better out there all of the time. And I used to tell them, look, I'm born and bred, and I plan on being here for the rest of my life. I love this city. I truly love it. But they said, no, you got inner city syndrome. And that was the key word. Inner city, like, inner, I don't think
I'm writing that down. Inner city syndrome. I think I might have that too.
But you know what's wrong, Dr. K, is one of my best friends, God rest his soul, he used to say, oh, you're paranoid. You need to get out of the city. Come. I said, I teach in the city. I live in the city. I love the city. And I said, well, maybe I do have it. But before he passed away, God rest his soul, he said, you know what? Oh, he said, I see it every day on the news. And when I come into the city, he said, I have to say, you were right, bro. And I said, it's not a I told you so thing, but I kind of told you so, yeah. And to make a long story short, now I'll cut this fast. There was a city councilman, I won't put your name, this is many, many years ago. We had a bet, and I said, look, I guarantee if you go into a certain neighborhood, and I told him about the neighborhood, I said, now I mean this, go after dark. I said, take a camera person or take a crew with you. He took one camera person with him. And they bombarded him with rocks and stones. It was on the news. It was brief, but it was on the news. And they ran him out. I went and saw him again. I'm like, well, you still want to honor the bet? He said, yeah, but that was just one isolated incident. I'm like, yeah, but I was right. And I say all I have to say is that, yeah, it is like the Wild Wild West. In some cases, the OK Corral.
Right.
And I'm not advocating. Please listen to this carefully. And I pray the listeners listen carefully. I am not advocating any type of vigilantism. However, I've talked to a lot of senior citizens and single ladies, you know, whatever, and they're like, you know, we don't know what to do, so we just don't get strapped. And like this one church lady I talked to said, what did she say? She said something to the effect, she said, do it to others, do unto others before they do it to you or something
like
that.
Oh, you know what? Elliot, I like what you said. You know, I got to stop you there. Not that what you said, because we have to go to the next call. I'm just going to put out there, folks, do unto others before they do unto you. Are we talking? Now, I just want to put this out. We got Leo Solutions. We got the cops with no solutions. We're talking Wild Wild West. Is it time for you to start thinking about carrying? I'm just putting that out there. I mean, in the Wild Wild West, how do you keep the balance of power? Because you know that everybody's carrying something. Now, folks know my stance on these guns. I'm just wondering if it is indeed the Wild Wild West, if the cops indeed don't have a plan, if we're indeed talking about stopping 13-year-olds and older, that would include my two sons, folks, and demanding picture ID from them. We are talking about throwing a dragnet, not around the whole city. Brother Leo didn't say everywhere. We're not talking about 21214 and 21210. We're not talking about there. We're talking about putting the dragnet around certain communities. Is that what we need to do to get this thing under control? We have Nathan on the phone from Baltimore. Nathan, how are you?
I'm doing fine. What Leo said is a disgrace. He's supposed to be a community activist. It's like Doc Cheatham. Doc Cheatham brags about he went down every police corner and showed the police chief where the drug corner's at. When the police go to these drug corners, they're not going to say, how you doing and what you can do for you. They're going to lock you up, beat you upside the head. They're going to do like they did Freddie Gray. And Doc Cheatham is responsible for Freddie Gray. He told the police where to go to get
it. Now we want to just invite Doc Cheatham to call. Now, I was down with you responding to Leo, but Doc Cheatham didn't call. So that's information we cannot verify. But you don't agree with Leo's comments. What do you think we should do, Nathan?
Police are not going to solve this problem.
Okay. Well, they said they didn't have a plan.
White this white racist society has to change its mindset before we can talk about what's going on in the inner cities of America.
And, child, you know that's not happening, Nathan. I mean, when you start talking about America, dismantling that, we got some problems.
Well, that's who is responsible for the crime in inner cities of America. It's white racist society.
All right, I'm going to stop you there, Nathan. And I'm stopping you there not because I either agree or disagree. I'm not confirming or denying. I'm just saying when you start talking about dismantling racism, white supremacy, and white nationalism, you're talking about structural racism, folks. That's built into the fabric of this nation. As I said in my op-ed column for the Afro this week, when you pull on the thread of white supremacy, you've got to be willing to tear the whole fabric apart, and I don't think people are willing to do that. We got Guy on the phone. Guy is a new caller from Baltimore. Guy, how are you? Welcome to the family.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'd like to comment on what the guy Leo said.
Yes.
You know, it's easy to, implement things on other people. You know, martial law or dragnets. You know, I believe that's just going to hurt more innocent people than the people it's designed, you know, to hurt. You know, but I like to make this comment also. This culture in the city. You know, most guys out here breaking the law, they know the penalties for it and all that. And they, you know, like, they're not afraid of the penalties, you know. But I like to say Jack Young, he kind of was on the right track as far as, you know, the boxing thing. It sounded like a publicity stunt, but, you know, something similar to that, they need to maybe, like, put some kind of message out for the people that, you know, everything in Baltimore is not worth killing somebody over. You know, I never hear that. You know, everything in Baltimore is the death penalty, seems like. You know, you step on somebody's shoe or you bump into somebody, somebody's getting killed.
Mm.
So, you know, like, maybe somebody should just, you know, say, you know, some kind of campaign, make a stand, you know.
All right.
Everything is not worth killing nobody over.
I definitely agree with that. And that saying that you kind of put out there, I would argue that it is similar to the work that Erica Bridgeford and the Baltimore Ceasefire, the work that they do. You start talking about nobody kill anyone for 72 hours, trying to find other ways to deal with anger and frustration. The Baltimore Algebra Project also looks at this. Safe Streets, Tyree Colleone tries to set up safe zones. So people are already doing what you're talking about. Now, we got to figure out what's going to happen, because the BPD, Baltimore Police Department, has put out this whole idea about trying to flood into these micro zones, like the 120 areas where we have most of the crime happening. Well, it seems like they need to kind of pull some things together, because the FOP Lodge Number 3 has released a press statement saying that they actually don't agree with this strategy, because all it is a regurgitation of past efforts. They're saying it's not new. We're going into these micro zones. How are we going into the micro zones when we don't have enough police officers? So I'm just saying, you folks need to get on Twitter, because BPU, Fraternal Order, Lodge Number 3, that's pretty hot in terms of responding immediately. They said, no, not hot zones. We've done that before. I have Kim Trueheart on the phone. Hey, Kim, how are you?
Okay, I'm doing well. You know, the thing that has not come up is the fact that our people are economically stressed.
Yeah.
They need jobs. And until we have jobs, the few dollars that are in our community are up for grabs.
Mm.
And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing people fighting each other over the madness for the dollar. And we need to get people trained, educated, and employed. And until we do this, the street economy rules.
Wow.
And that economy says it's doggy dog, right? It
yeah.
says, you know, we're going to block you, knock you upside your head to take what you've got. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the desperation to feed families.
Wow.
The desperation to keep roofs over your head. The desperation to pay the water bill, right? And it's madness. It absolutely
is madness,
and we are in a crisis. But the solution is jobs.
Let me ask you this, Kim, because I know you keep your ear to the ground. Can you connect what we're talking about here to this Poll Water Homes crisis? Because it's all connected here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've got folks in Poll Homes who have jobs. And you're telling these people that for 10 days you've got to go to work and still support your family, but don't wash your body, right? Don't clean your clothes.
Oof.
Yeah. How does that make sense? You know, families need infrastructure that's solid. They need sustainable solutions to raise their families. And we've just taken a fundamental aspect of life away from them. And wow. Then folks are acting as though it's business as usual. You know, we're told that the system needs to pressurize itself so that the water can flow. Well, until that happens, put these people in stable homes, in environments where they can take care of their family.
I'm so sorry we lost Kim. Folks, we're going to take a quick break here. We have the phones lit up. We have Brian, Curtis, Ernest, Richard, Larry. Hold on. We're coming to you. And then, folks, if you haven't called yet, you still have an opportunity. 410-319-8888. The Wild Wild West, a city in crisis. Folks ain't got no water. They can't flush their toilets. Like, all this is happening now. Give me a call. Let's talk about it.
On the Penn Line of the BART train system, all trains heading from Washington to Baltimore are on schedule. No delays on the light rail link in town, the Metro Subway link likewise on schedule. Local link bus diversions include the 22 and the 91 diverting westbound at Druid Park Drive and Park Heights, the 94 southbound, the 21 eastbound diverting at 36th and Chestnut, the Blue Line eastbound diverting at Mulberry and Smallwood. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.